TUC Radio San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Nuclear Y2K Symposium, March 8, 1999, part 3 of a series of 4. Y2K and nuclear weapons. What happens to the global arsenal of nuclear weapons when the clocks turn on December 31st of this year? Rockets with nuclear warheads, both in the former Soviet Union and in the United States, are still poised to be launched on hair trigger alert, in spite of the end of the Cold War. Around 5,000 missiles stand fueled with gyroscopes operating, ready to fire. They are set to be launched within 20 minutes or less. Today's speaker says that it is impossible for a Y2K era to launch one of these missiles by itself. However, a Y2K era in the early warning system that includes computers, ground radar, and satellites might lead Strategic Command to assume that missiles have been launched, and they then might retaliate and initiate a nuclear war based on false data. Bruce Blair is Senior Fellow for Foreign Policy Studies at the Brookings Institution. His areas of expertise are arms control, nuclear proliferation, and safeguards. As a former Air Force officer, he had direct contact with nuclear weapons. He is the author of The Logic of Accidental Nuclear War. He spoke at the Y2K Symposium on Capitol Hill. The event was co-sponsored by Helen Caldicott, Senator Tom Harkin, and Dan Plesh from BASIC, the British American Security Information Council. Here is Bruce Blair.
Well, I'd like to thank Dan Plesh and Helen Caldicott for sponsoring this event, and I especially want to thank all of you for turning out to listen. I think the evidence does not justify the concern which some people have expressed that Y2K could automatically trigger the launch of nuclear missiles. I feel quite strongly that the technical safeguards and the human barriers are sufficient to prevent that kind of incident. Please don't infer too much optimism from that opening comment, though, because I do find that the Y2K issue is very interesting from the standpoint of nuclear control. I think it could indeed play havoc with our nuclear arsenals and the operators of our arsenals, and could contribute mightily to a potentially catastrophic incident. But let me begin with the sort of the upbeat part of the story here, which is, again, that in my view, the Y2K cannot trigger a missile launch by Russia, the United States, or anyone else. This is perhaps easiest to grasp by taking a specific weapon system and just looking at it briefly. And I would choose the Trident missile submarine system as a good example. This system has a very labor-intensive launch process. It involves scores of people acting in unison on the ship to position the ship, to load targeting data into the missiles. It's just, to me, rather inconceivable to think that a computer glitch could cause this sequence of actions to take place. And I prepare to defend that conclusion. There are other weapon systems, however, and other scenarios that are not so easy to dismiss out of hand. In particular, the silo-based rockets on hair trigger alert in both Russia and the United States are poised for immediate launch upon receipt of only 3 short computer commands. On the U.S. side, it's the equivalent of basically of entering a password into the computer via a keyboard and hitting the enter button 3 times. The missiles in their silos are fueled. Their gyroscopes are operating unlike missiles on submarines, even submarines on full alert. They're ready to fly at a moment's notice as soon as they receive these commands, raising the question whether somehow a computer glitch might transmit those three commands. The same holds on the Russian side. Their missiles are also fueled, their gyroscopes are running, they're ready to fly upon receipt of short computer commands. And in fact, on the Russian side, their control of these missiles is even more highly automated than on the U.S. side. There is even an option in Russian control of their silo-based missiles for the top authorities in Moscow to launch them by remote radio command, a computer-based system that bypasses the entire chain of command, human chain of command, right down to the level of the missile silos. Again, raising the question whether it might be possible for the Millennium Bug to somehow cause the computer to execute this launch program entirely on its own. Well, I have looked at these possibilities to the extent that I'm able to from the outside, and have concluded that there still is sufficient human involvement, human participation at one level or another in this launch sequence, and that there still are sufficient technical safeguards to prevent that from happening. For example, the Russian general staff must, the senior officers must, retrieve a special modem, a piece of equipment, from a safe in the war rooms of the general staff in the Moscow vicinity and install that equipment into the launch computer at the main command posts before that launch sequence can take place, before they actually can turn keys to fire these weapons. That is a piece of equipment that contains special codes known as unblocking or enabling codes that missiles in the silos must receive before they will accept the launch command. The same is true on the U.S. side. The missiles in the silos, whether Minuteman or MX, also need to receive codes from higher authority that are transmitted by the launch crews, which the launch crews receive from higher authority in a launch order. So there are a number of safeguards on both sides that I believe make it totally implausible for a computer glitch to produce an accidental missile launch. It might shut down the control function. It may prevent a launch, but I see no way that it could actually start a launch. And that's a conclusion that I think is valid even if these systems are susceptible to the Y2K bug, and apparently they are not, according to sources that I've checked, unofficial sources on the U.S. side. The U.S. Minuteman and MX systems are not susceptible. And according to the leading authority on the Russian side, General Dvorkin of the Strategic Rocket Forces, the calendar date doesn't exist at all in their automated system of control over their nuclear rockets. It's therefore, according to his position, immune from the bug altogether. He's a highly credible spokesman. I know him well. I've worked with him closely for a number of years and have known him for almost a decade. However, I would ask that we all continue to check, because I'm not completely confident, obviously, in the reliability of this kind of information. Now, let me turn to the gloomy part of the story. And there, as I said at the outset, there is a reassuring side, and there is also a pessimistic side. And again, I defer to General Dvorkin, who has reported to us, to our senior officials in the government and publicly, that the Russian system of early warning, satellites, ground radar, and all the interconnecting infrastructure, is susceptible to the Y2K bug, that it's a serious problem, that it might cause the Russian warning network to blank out or even to generate false indications of an attack. General Dvorkin has also reported that systems designed or operated to control satellites in space may fail, allowing those satellites to drift out of orbit and to die. He's identified 70-some-odd facilities under his jurisdiction, early warning facilities primarily, that are, in, as he puts it, in a critical condition in Russia that need to be fixed, and has reported that it will cost about somewhat just under $4 million, 80-some-odd million rubles to correct the problem on the Russian side. And Russia is very late to get started on this, as General Dvorkin will quickly acknowledge. The slow start on this typifies the country's neglect of its aging nuclear controls. The Design Bureau in St. Petersburg, Impulse, actually went on strike not that long ago. It was about a year and a half ago, as I recall, to protest pay arrears and the lack of resources to do their job, to troubleshoot the nuclear control system. They staged a one-day strike in St. Petersburg, and even the director went out into the streets. So Y2K is only one of these afflictions, and only one of the results of it is that the early warning system in Russia is deteriorating to the point where the risks of false warning and other command failures are clearly growing. This is an adverse trend, and it's especially adverse because Russia keeps, believe it or not, on order of 2,000 strategic weapons on air trigger alert today, still, at the end of the Cold War, poised for immediate launch. So does the United States. Together, we could launch, within a matter of minutes, approximately 5,000 strategic warheads at one another, the equivalent in explosive power of about 100,000 Hiroshima bombs lobbed around the planet in under an hour. And both countries strive to maintain these arsenals on high alert so that in an emergency they could be fired on short notice on warning from those satellites and ground radars that are undergoing such deterioration in Russia. Launch on warning is the sort of jargon to describe that option, and it is becoming an even more central option in Russia as its regular strategic forces deteriorate and Russia finds it harder and harder to disperse its submarines and land mobile rockets into the oceans, the sanctuaries of the oceans, and the sanctuaries of the forests. So Russia today actually relies more on launch on warning than it did during the Cold War. This applies even to submarines in port, which are often kept poised for launch manned by a skeletal crew at dockside, sitting on the surface, ready to fire within about 10 minutes after receiving a launch message. Now, the drill for launch on warning is extremely demanding. It's a process dominated by adrenaline, not by cognition. And that applies all the way to the top of the chain of command, where the timelines are extremely pressure-packed and short. The command systems, when trying to launch nuclear weapons on warning, that is to fire one's own friendly forces after detecting an apparent attack by a hostile state, but before the arrival of incoming hostile missiles, a window of opportunity that would run from 10 to roughly 20 minutes. The command systems trying to operate within that time-constrained window would allow only a few minutes to detect and assess the attack, a few more minutes for our presidents to consult with our top nuclear advisors and reach a decision whether to retaliate, and a few minutes to transmit that decision out to the field for immediate launch by the crews. The emergency procedures for this option require the duty commander at NORAD to give his assessment within approximately 3 minutes after the first sensor reports a missile attack. The duty commander in Colorado at NORAD has to give his judgment as to whether North America is under attack in about 3 minutes after the first sensor indication reports to him. Believe it or not, the duty commander at the Strategic Command in Omaha, who is involved in briefing the president on his nuclear war plan options and their consequences, expects to get to have 30 seconds to brief the president on his options and their consequences. Clearly, these procedures apply on the Russian side as well. In fact, they have an even tighter deadline for launch on warning because they face weapon systems that are patrolling very close to their territory and which have flight times much shorter than the ones that we would expect ourselves. All of these procedures clearly powerfully bias the top leaders to authorize a launch solely on the basis of sensor data from satellites or ground radar. This, of course, means that there is virtually no margin for error of any kind, no tolerance for Y2K bugs or anything else, including solar storms. I was interested this morning to hear from one of the panelists that a solar storm cycle is due at the end of this year. Solar storms are notorious for causing false alarms and early warning systems. So Y2K is potentially problematic here in that it could contribute to a false alarm. It could potentially trigger a mistaken launch, or it could contribute to a mistaken launch by, for example, shutting down some sensors that are needed to cross-validate the information coming from other sensors, which may be false. Now, outside the realm of early warning, the Y2K can have a number of other potentially serious consequences, and I'll be very brief to cover those in my presentation. One of the possibilities is that Y2K could shut down some of the links in the nuclear command and control network in a way that would degrade the ability to monitor and prevent unauthorized actions by individuals down the chain of command. I suspect that this is a more serious problem in Russia than in the United States. And finally, there's the potential for Y2K to shut down critical power grids in Russia that provide power to cool nuclear reactors, not only in power plants, but even more importantly, in my mind, to cool the hot nuclear reactors that are still on deactivated submarines floating around in ports all over Russia, mainly in the Northern Fleet area. There are 70 or so such hot reactors sitting on deactivated submarines that are being cooled thanks to electrical power supplied by ground stations, by power stations in the vicinity. If those power facilities shut down as a result of Y2K, and if insufficient backup power exists, which I strongly suspect in Russia nowadays, then there is, a real likelihood that those reactors could heat up to the point of explosion, potentially causing very widespread radioactive contamination. In 1995, there was an incident where one of these submarine reactors, a handful of them, had their shore power cut off by a utility that did it intentionally because the bill hadn't been paid. The officers responsible for the safety of the reactors took an armed team to the utility facility and forced them to turn it on at gunpoint because of the imminent threat of this kind of catastrophe. So let me just turn very quickly to remedies and make the case that the underlying danger here is really not Y2K, but what Y2K exposes, which, as Congressman Markey indicated at the lunch hour, is an unconscionable alert status for U.S. and Russian nuclear missiles. We are still operating our nuclear arsenals as though the Cold War never ended and as though safety isn't a problem. And I believe that our governments need to change that practice immediately. I'm, of course, especially worried about Russia. To put it very bluntly, Russia should no longer be in the business of running a nuclear weapons operation. Not that the U.S. nuclear arsenal is completely safe. It's far from perfect. There are many problems. There may be even some serious Y2K issues that haven't yet surfaced. But the situation in Russia has reached a point where there's simply no tolerance any longer for further deterioration. I think that it is therefore imperative that both sides take their strategic missile arsenals off alert, declare a mutual stand down, and extend the time needed to prepare them for launch from the current period of minutes, literally minutes, to a period of days, weeks, or even months. If we were to both adopt this agenda and carry out this recommendation, we would greatly reduce the susceptibility of nuclear forces to inadvertent or mistaken or unauthorized launch and easily cover the Y2K issue in the process. While pursuing this remedy, I think we should scrape up the few million dollars that General Dvorkin needs and assist him in fixing his Y2K problems in their early warning and strategic rocket command and control system, and that we should also scrape up the millions, few millions of dollars or so that it would be well spent assisting Russia to fix Y2K problems in their nuclear power generation. And lastly, we should carry out a plan in the works that will establish a joint U.S.-Russian warning center at Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado by the end of this year. This is really a little more than a Band-Aid, but it might well help mitigate the consequences of a false alarm in Russia's warning network. The idea is that NORAD in Colorado, the main U.S. warning center, would feed its data to a center at nearby Peterson Air Force Base, where Russian officers would sit alongside American officers monitoring this feed from NORAD, with the Russian officers holding a cell phone or having some other satellite link back to Moscow so that they could report as needed any information about the status of missile launches around the globe. In conclusion, I think clearly the best preventive medicine for Y2K and for the entire gamut of control problems in Russia and the United States is for our two sides to de-alert their arsenals. One of the questions that came up at the news conference is whether this is politically possible. And I have to believe that it is politically possible with leadership at the level of the White House and the Kremlin. I am reminded of the steps ordered by President Bush in 1991 that called for thousands of strategic weapons to be taken immediately off alert. This was a unilateral order given by President Bush in September of 1991. He at the same time ordered all of our strategic bombers taken off alert and withdrew from around the globe many thousands of short-range tactical nuclear weapons unilaterally back to the United States. Probably the most important arms control step taken by the United States in the 1990s was ordered by President Bush unilaterally. He didn't negotiate this with the Russians, with Gorbachev. He didn't submit his decision to the Congress for ratification. He took this step as commander-in-chief. And if you and I had proposed this to our government in 1991, it would have sounded ludicrous to everyone. We would have been laughed out of the room. I think the idea of standing down our nuclear arsenals today is far less ludicrous sounding. And in fact, I think that there is a serious amount of genuine interest in this idea, and that with real leadership and public support, that this agenda could go forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed, Bruce. I'd like to warmly endorse all of his remarks from the outset. I might add that as a foreigner in this country, I do find it bizarre that a society where champagne bottles come with notices warning which way up to point them, that the entire society is prepared to continue to exist entirely unnecessarily in a state where it could be annihilated at any moment due to a Russian missile attack. The disconnect and the denial and a general lack of interest across the political, across government in this question, and the lack of political will even to go as far as President Bush did or to follow suit, as Bruce suggested, is to my mind quite incongruous.
That was Dan Plesch of BASIC, the British American Security Information Council. He moderated the session with a previous speaker, Bruce Blair. The symposium was convened by Helen Caldicott's organization, STAR. The morning session dealt with Y2K risks to nuclear reactors. The afternoon session on nuclear weapons was co-sponsored by Senator Tom Harkin. You heard part three of a four-part series from the Nuclear Y2K Symposium. Part four will present the members of a Russian delegation seeking Y2K help for their troubled country. The full one-hour tape of Nuclear Weapons and Y2K is $10. A transcript and 15 pages of information is $8. If you want both, the tape and transcript, send us $15. Send the correct amount to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. For a credit card order, call TUC Radio toll-free at 1-877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. The music is by G.S. Sarstef. My name is Mariah Gallardin. Thank you for listening.